you know, the blockchain and digital assets can invoke like very emotional responses. And so I want to be clear that it's simply a way to transact shares. And so from a high level, a token is accounted for on the blockchain, and a token just represents a share that is on, you know, an exchange like securitized. That's the technology they use is a blockchain. That's really all that means.
I'm in California and anchor stores are closing like crazy in certain areas. If you go to San Francisco, Nordstrom's in the main mall in San Francisco just left. I'm seeing some of these bigger closed stores shut down regularly.
So for us, it specifically refers to grocery stores. And it's not necessarily because grocery stores are the end all be all, but it's because there is really good demographic data around grocery stores, right? And there's one like on every corner, right? Or every good corner. You know, no matter where you go, you have to have good culture. You have to focus on your core values and live out your core values. Cause like good culture to you could mean good culture to somebody else, right? Like they're not all the same. So I think like living your core values, being prominent about those is ultimately what's going to keep people and attract new talent, regardless of your strategy for growth.
Welcome back to another episode of Dental Marketing Theory. I'm your host, Gary Byrne. I'm the founder of SMC National, where we help you create, convert, and close more new patients so you can grow the way that you want. But if you want to grow, you are going to need a building. That's one of the things that is really important. And today, I have Austin Hare, who's the managing partner at Leaders Real Estate. This is the third time that I've had Austin on, and this one was a really fun conversation. Number one, we're going to talk about the blockchain investment opportunity that Austin has around dental real estate and how that differs from REITs. He's also going to talk about the new movement that he's seeing around de novos and why people are focusing more on de novos than ever before. And then lastly, how to pick a consumer-friendly location so you don't have to hire people like me for marketing. You can just get the right location and get new patients just flowing in from that. You're not going to want to miss this one. Stay tuned. All right, Austin, it's good to see you, my friend. I just got the opportunity to catch up with Austin at Dykema. We were both in Denver. How did the event go for you guys overall?
Yeah, you know, Dykema is a great event. It's definitely one of our favorites, if not our favorite one. And just so much energy, you know, so many deals getting done. Even as a non-dentist, like it's so high level and entrepreneurial. They're talking about so many things that I get a lot out of the content. And it's always great networking.
Yeah, it's by far my favorite event to go to. And every time I walk away with so many new contacts or just refreshed relationships because everybody's there. Everybody you want to talk to is there. So by far, my number one event that I want to go to every single year is Dykema.
Yeah,
so
agreed.
It was really, really, really good. And we got to catch up. Family's doing good. I think this is the third time that we've talked on this podcast. And so we were catching up at Dykema and you're doing American Ninja Warrior. You're doing a bunch of stuff with Airbnbs, which I'm super fascinated with. And then also your family's growing as well.
Yeah, it's been crazy. You know, me and my wife don't have time for date nights or personal things or anything because within the family and the businesses and, you know, her career and Ninja, it's like Ninja kind of turns into our date night. I mean, that's where we go and we encourage each other. We're driving there together. You know, we travel for competitions. We don't go on vacations. Like it's sucked up literally like all of our time.
Yeah, be careful what you wish for, right? The fun things turn into jobs if you're not careful.
Yeah, for sure. But we love it. But yeah, it's a huge time sacrifice. So, but no, baby is growing. She's almost two, and all that kind of stuff keeps you busy.
Well, I'm really excited to talk about the topics. Obviously, you're in real estate inside of dental, and you're very familiar with the real estate space. And there's three things that we kind of identified that are kind of shifting on people right now. Number one is people moving more to a de novo model, which is interesting from a real estate play. Number two, consumer-friendly locations. That's kind of always been a thing, but people are shifting now more towards that way, which is honestly kind of bad for marketing, guys like myself, right? But it's great for people if you want consistent patient flow. And then number three is the blockchain and the fun that you have on the blockchain. So let's jump into the first one. What's going on right now in the market that you're seeing from acquisitions versus de novos when it comes to real estate?
Well, you know, we noticed at Dykema this year, we were at the DEO earlier, we were at the ADSO events. You know, those are the three of the biggest events in group dentistry. Plus with the clients that we're talking to, we just kind of noticed more people than normal have come up to us and said, hey, you know, we're starting a de novo strategy or thinking about doing a de novo strategy or doing a split-prong de novo and acquisition strategy. And so, you know, it makes sense. I haven't really dove into the specifics with each of these people, but my assumption is just that with interest rate hikes from the bank, like when you, and then, you know, we're at premium levels for EBITDA multiples, right? Like the EBITDA multiple that you got to pay to get some of these offices and these locations and these practices is still at record highs. I mean, it hasn't come down at all, despite the fact that interest rates have gone way up and your cost of capital has gone way up. And so I think it's making it a little bit difficult to underwrite these deals and make them cash flow. And so when you go to a de novo perspective, you know, you're not paying a cost of EBITDA. You're coming out of pocket and you're waiting for the revenue to catch up to the expenses, of course. But it seems to be that that's a little bit more doable when just considering like the financial climate that we're in.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the show, but I got a new segment that I wanted to share with you. It's called Ask Gary. And what we're doing is we're going over questions that you have about marketing and answering them in our podcast. So if you want to reach out to us and get your question answered and maybe even get on the podcast to have it answered live, all you have to do is DM us, leave a comment, or email us at askgary@smcnational.com. Again, that's askgary@smcnational.com. Our most recent question came in from Kristen, and her question was this: what's the single best way to generate leads and new patients? This is a great question, and I'm going to break this down for you in under a minute. So first thing that you want to understand is, do you want quality or do you want quantity? The easiest way to get quality is through patient referrals. The downside to that, though, is that you can't generate a lot of them, meaning if you need an extra 40 or 50 new patients next month, you're not going to be able to do that through generating patient referrals. On the flip side, if you want quantity, then digital is definitely the way to go, and you can measure the whole thing. And it's the easiest to get a bunch of new patients, but it does take a little bit of time to dial in the quality. And what I mean by that is that these patients don't trust you like a patient referral. A patient referral already trusts you because somebody else did the selling for you. One of your happy customers told them how great you are. So that is today's episode of Ask Gary. Contact us, reach out to us, and we will answer your questions. And again, we might even get you on the podcast. And back to the episode. Enjoy.
Wow. Okay. So more and more people are doing de novos. Now, obviously the downside to a de novo is you have to staff that out. And so with an acquisition, you're getting a full team or a semi-full team. With the de novos, you have to staff those out. So have you had any conversations with people around that of like how they're going to actually get people to fulfill those de novos, or what are your thoughts on that?
No, you know, everybody that I've talked to has had staffing challenges, right? That's just one of the things that they mentioned. So like even groups that grow 100% via acquisition, like they're faced with the same thing because, you know, you acquire a practice and there's a change of culture and there might not be as much synergy. And so that, you know, there's going to be turnover. And then even like in existing ones, like, you know, there's turnover all the time. And so I think that's just, no matter where, you can't escape it. You know, no matter where you go, you have to have good culture. You have to focus on your core values and live out your core values. Cause like good culture to you could mean good culture to somebody else, right? Like they're not all the same. So I think like living your core values, being prominent about those is ultimately what's going to keep people and attract new talent, regardless of your strategy for growth.
Yeah. I love that. I recently had, the VP of talent acquisition for Aspen on our podcast. And he, I mean, that's probably one of the hardest jobs in dental because they only do de novos and they only grow when they have talent. And every practice, every time they open up a new practice, which is like, it's some crazy number, like one every couple of days or one every week or something like that.
Crazy.
And
yeah.
So you have to have that fully staffed and he has to recruit every single one of them. And if they don't have the people, they can't grow. So that's who people are competing against when it comes to that talent acquisition. But I don't want to derail us. Very fascinating about the de novos. Now, what's your thoughts on the consumer-friendly locations? And just to give everybody kind of a context breakdown on this before you jump into this, Austin. So I recently had a doctor come on our podcast. He was actually at our boot camp at Dykema as well. His name is Jan Jeffer. And he has, I think, 13 practices. In Canada, and he runs them without any marketing, like zero marketing. They all get about 50 wow. or more new patients a month, and their marketing is actually in the location, meaning they spend a lot more per location and they spend less on marketing, but the location becomes their marketing, if that makes sense, because they're such good locations that they automatically get 30, 40, 50 new patients right out of the box as soon as they open. And then they just grow it from there and create a really good culture that attracts new patients in. So are you seeing more and more of that going on in the dental industry?
Oh yeah, 100%. And you know, you mentioned earlier, I think this is my second or third time on your show. We have talked about this in the past, but just to reiterate, you know, the fast food chains really got it right a long time ago, right? Like back in the 50s and 60s. I mean, that's when they started doing their research and putting the locations on the corner of Main and Main. And to us, it's commonsensical because we've grown up that way. But there was a strategy that went into getting these really, really good locations that helped the fast food industry a lot. You know, then you saw like big drugstores doing that. And then in the 80s and 90s, early 2000s, the banks started doing that. And then right after that, like dental and a lot of other locations did. And so it used to be like, hey, you graduated dental school, you know, you build it and they will come type mentality, find the place with the cheapest rent and go from there. But what the big DSOs are doing is paying the extra rent to get those great locations, to get the, you know, siphon off that traffic from the Starbucks next door or their busy restaurant or the Chipotle or whatever it is. And success leaves clues, right? Like they are very, very successful. They're growing very quickly and they continue to grow. And it's because they're making it easy for the patient. You know, these days it's all about consumer convenience. You can't expect them to go online and search for you and you know, do it, book a appointment and come in like 6 weeks later or whatever. It's like you're driving by and you see that place and you realize that you don't have to go off the beaten path to get there. Like you can pull into whatever it is that you're doing. Maybe it's a grocery store or get a coffee or whatever. And then like right next door is your dental office. So either A, going to be seeing it every single day when you drive by, or B, it's a drive to and not a drive through location. And but ultimately, you know, that's been a trend that's been happening for decades, but those are the players who are going to win.
That's awesome. And now, what are some of the downsides of this, or should people be careful of? This is where it's really important that they talk to an expert like you, right? Because I can sit on a podcast all day long and be like, you should get a location that's visible to everybody and pay more for it so you can pay less on your marketing. But that can backfire too. Don't come to me and ask for advice. We have an expert here. What are the things that people really should be thinking through when it comes to these kinds of acquisitions or finding the right kind of location that's going to really boost their new patient growth?
Yeah, well, look, competition matters, right? And we all like to say that we don't have any competition because like we're so different and we're so unique. But I think really the distinction is that there's a Venn diagram, right? Like you overlap and you have competition in some areas, and there's other areas where sure you don't compete against other people, but especially in general practice, like, you know, you've got a lot of competition when it comes to other dentists. And so you have to be intentional about where you go and do some research, right? So by one token, if you're in a medical plaza and you're recessed way off the main road and it's time to relocate, like sure, you can go really close because you've essentially already done your research. But if you're doing a de novo strategy, now you really want to, you know, be careful. Like, so we always make sure that we do like a very detailed opportunity analysis where we're looking at where are the ideal patients, where are they already going? Like we're doing, you know, grocery store anchor analysis is just to find out what is that area, trade area look like? You know, what kind of income demographic, what's the population density, what's the age, everything. And then looking at the competition, right? So overlay those kind of demographic maps with competition maps and find out where there is the highest amount of ideal patients already going with the least amount of competition.
Yeah. And so let's talk about anchor stores a little bit. Can you just define that for the audience? Because
yeah,
I'm in California and anchor stores are closing like crazy in certain areas. If you go to San Francisco, Nordstrom's in the main mall in San Francisco just left. Around the area where I live in Southern California, I'm seeing some of these bigger closed stores shut down regularly. So could you just go through, define what an anchor store is and then kind of how to make sure you protect yourself with the right kind of anchor stores?
Sure. Yeah. So for us, it specifically refers to grocery stores. And it's not necessarily because grocery stores are the end all be all, but it's because there is really good demographic data around grocery stores, right? So we pay thousands of dollars a month for all of our subscriptions and all of our data that we get. And grocery stores have like a lot of the most accurate data. So we can look on there and we can, and there's one like on every corner, right? Or every good corner. And so it gives us a great insight into the like detailed demographics of what kind of people are going there. So instead of kind of, you know, there's a lot of different companies out there that offer a lot of different demographic services. And the problem is they're not all detailed, right? Like a lot of them rely on census data from 2012, which at this stage was 11 years ago. So essentially what you're doing is you're taking data from 2012 and you're trying to project forward into present day, 2023, as best as you can, right? And so it's hard to make that kind of data accurate. And so we specifically look at grocer anchors, you know, To your point about large anchors shutting down, like, yeah, that's true. Like in certain places, a lot of these large anchor stores are in retail, but you know, the grocery stores are like very resilient. And so that's kind of like our backbone when we do these searches.
Yeah. And then, so basically what you're looking for is you're looking for a business that's going to attract a lot of foot traffic, right? Because if you have that, then you're going to be good. So if I go next door, if I'm a dentist and I go next door to a vet, the vet can't be an anchor store because they're not going to produce enough people coming through. I need to be next to, in Southern California, maybe it's Safeway or a Whole Foods or something like that. And every part of the country is a little bit different. So grocery stores are like the main one that you look for. Is there ever anybody else that you're looking for?
Yeah. And let me be clear too. You know, I'm not saying that you specifically need to go in that exact plaza, right? If we can, great. Like if it's available to go in a grocery store and there's no dental exclusivity, by all means do it. But those are like few and far between. Like, you know, I know Aspen and Heartland love going in those plazas like the second that they open up. And of course, from a developer's perspective, they're a very safe tenant. So they get first right of refusal whenever there is a new grocer anchor development going on. So it's actually kind of rare that you can physically go in that plaza. And so when I say grocer anchors, like what we're using that for is to get the data. And so as an example, let's just say there's a hard corner of where there's like three grocer anchors, three large grocery stores that are all, you know, different brands. But we're just going to pull that data. We're going to find out what kind of people are already visiting there. And then we're going to try and get as close as possible. So maybe it means going across the street. And that's totally okay because we're still pulling from the demographic data and research that they've already done and the amount of consumers that are already going there. You know, if we can, even if it is, like I know I mentioned earlier, you want to have less competition. It's true, but you can outposition the competition if you find an available spot that's like right there across the street from, you know, a large place or a large intersection or a busy road where people are already going.
Got it. Okay. Very, very interesting. So a lot of homework to do. If you want more information on this, just reach out to Austin. He'll help you with this, help you understand the differences. And it can really work. I've seen people make it work where that is their marketing, is picking the right location. Now, let's talk a little bit about the blockchain. What is the blockchain and what are you doing with it that makes you guys a little bit different than everybody else?
So yeah, we have a fund on the blockchain and, you know, the blockchain and digital assets can invoke like very emotional responses. And so I want to be clear that it's simply a way to transact shares. And so from a high level, a token is accounted for on the blockchain, and a token just represents a share that is on, you know, an exchange like Securitize. That's the technology they use is a blockchain. That's really all that it means. So why do we use the blockchain if it's just a share anyways? Well, there's several different reasons. Number one, we believe that there is a bigger appetite for healthcare-backed real estate than there is access. And specifically, you have to be an accredited investor most of the time or, you know, to be able to, or wealthy enough to buy a building, right? So like you'd have to be an accredited investor to purchase shares of a fund that's privately held or wealthy enough to buy the building, right? So we're trying to democratize access by giving everybody access to that who wants to, because you don't have to be accredited in order to buy digital assets, the types that we're going to be using on our fund. So that's number one. Number two, just from a convenience standpoint, I mean, you know, there, when you do buy shares of a fund, normally a private fund, there's usually a 5 to 7 year holding period. If you do want to sell your shares, like that has to go through an intermediary who's got to find another accredited investor. And normally you're just going to be selling it at a discount if you have, you know, some reason that you need to withdraw part of your investment for any, like at any point in time, right? If you can't wait till maturity, you're going to kind of get punished. And so our thesis is we're giving everybody access to it who wants to. It's the same, like selling or buying shares of our fund will be, you know, pretty much the same as selling or buying shares on the public traded stock markets. Like if you have a TD trade account or whatever, I mean, you know, it's going to be that simple. And so I think that it's also instantaneous. And so I think that if you think about it like a cryptocurrency, it's not really an accurate way to frame it, because the value lies in the asset itself. Like the value is the real estate. I mean, real estate is historically the safest asset in the world. Healthcare is like the most recession resistant asset in the world. And so when you combine these two together, healthcare backed real estate, you know, you're getting some of the most risk-free assets. Nothing's risk-free completely, but it's as close as you can get in our opinion. And so that's kind of why we chose to use the blockchain and why we chose this industry. Sorry, I lost you there. I can't hear you.
Sorry about that. So what's the difference between this and a REIT?
Great question. So a REIT, those can be privately or publicly traded. Let's use the example of a publicly traded one, because now we're comparing apples to apples of non-accredited investors having access to them. With a REIT, you're obligated by law to distribute 90% of the profits every quarter. So that's great if you are relying on this to pay your monthly bills and retire or whatever, but it comes at a sacrifice when it comes to maximizing your ROI. So we're targeting between 12 to 16% annually with the new interest rate hikes. Prior to that, we were targeting 18 to 22%. Now, these are all just projections, right? But it's based on what we've done historically. And so if you appreciate, if your shares appreciate by 16% in any given year, we're not going to be giving you dividends or anything like that. Normally dividends are around 8%, but you can take 8% of your account and cash it out and you're still up 8% for the year, right? So we're doing this because, like I said, it's more for the person who wants to maximize their ROI than it is for somebody who needs to live on their cash flow. And there's no right or wrong answer, because if you have to live on the cash flow, then sure, like, you know, a REIT might be a better option for you, but ours is, you know, dedicated, like, a little bit different for that reason.
So I was talking to my mom at Dicom, actually, because she saw the REIT booth. There was several booths about REITs and things like this. And now I'm thinking through what you're saying. And she's been in real estate her whole life. And she's like, man, I really want to get into one of these things. And then she said, but I think the commercial market is really hurting right now. What's your thoughts on the position of where the commercial market is currently at and what the future holds for it? Are we on the verge of a big old crash? Are only certain kind of buildings going to crash? What's going on? Like, what's your opinion of what's going on?
Yeah, that's a loaded question, and it's a good question. And, you know, I want to preface by saying, like, I am wrong about predicting the future all the time, right? But we have to make predictions in order to keep moving forward. And so I would just say, as I see it right now, I already expected the bottom to fall out of the commercial real estate market. Okay, but I also expected the bottom to fall out of the residential real estate market back in 2020. When everybody else did. What I didn't realize at the time is how much a rising tide lifts all boats, like with the printing of money, regardless of people exiting California and New York and whatever, the reason that their real estate rose was just because you had more money in the system. That was something that I, you know, in hindsight, it's easy to see. But when it comes to commercial real estate, you know, there's two things at play. Number one, it's very segmented. So you can have a terrible year in multifamily and office space and be totally fine in retail. And that's what's been happening. So retail has been like very strong, and it's like you mentioned when you're retail.
Can you explain the difference between those two? What's the difference between retail and office space?
Like, yeah. You have six or seven different categories of commercial real estate. Residential is very easy. It's single family homes, maybe a duplex like that, but that's it. Commercial real estate, you can have industrial, which is where they ship all the packages out of Amazon. You can have large medical hospitals, right? You can have, retail, which is where you would have, like you mentioned, Nordstrom, right? Like, this is a place that's very convenient for consumers to drive to. Like, when we talked about retail earlier, it means like it's off those main drags. It's where a lot of the restaurants and the shopping and the bars and everything like that, anything that you can, like, you can see very easily in your daily commute. You know, typically medical is going to be like a little bit recessed, but they have their own classification. Multifamily refers to apartments, and then like self-storage and a couple other ones. And so, When people talk about commercial real estate, what I find is typically they're referring specifically to office. And so office are those big tall buildings that you see downtown. And yeah, those are going to take a hit, right? But it's a different user that uses those office buildings than it puts than uses those retail buildings. And so both things can be true. You can have the office buildings suffer and start to lose market share and go out of business and have to you know, do these distressed sales. And you can still have retail that's pretty strong. Like, you know, we're in Florida, but we do deals, you know, 44 different states. And most of the grade A retail places around the country have been pretty resilient. And then, like, again, I thought they would fall and I hoped they would fall and I've been waiting them to fall and I've been wrong. And I think that the reason that they haven't fallen is because you have what's the tailwinds that these asset classes are facing is the fact that A, healthcare isn't generally going out of business ever, but not right now, it's not. And so what that means is you have to create a new build out, right? Like, start a new build out from scratch. And the replacement costs, as you know, are like very, very high because now you got to buy the land. Everybody wants more money. The labor is up. The cost of supplies is up. And so essentially, like, if you want to go and look for a distressed asset, like they don't really exist. Now, of course, you have the headwinds, which is interest rates, right? Like, that makes it more and more expensive. If you have to refinance every 5 years, at some point in time, people are going to have to refinance and pay more interest. But you know, the incentive to sell it is low because the tenants are still there. They're still paying. And if you want to go start a new practice or do whatever, like, you know, you're going to have to go and do a new build out, which is costly. And so I think that that's kind of been what's keeping these prices higher than we expected them to stay. Because I like when interest rates go up, usually pricing goes down, but that hasn't happened recently. And I don't know that we're going to see that.
Wow. Okay. That's very, very fascinating. I definitely learned something there. Before we part ways, Austin, if someone has questions about this stuff and they're like, hey, should I go left? Should I go right with my real estate? Should I get a de novo? Should I invest in your blockchain project that you have going on? Should I really consider a more consumer-friendly location? Is the market going to crash? Is it not? But in their situation, right? Like if you're in San Francisco, it's different than if you're in Boise and in Orlando or wherever. How could they reach out to you and actually pick your brain on this kind of stuff?
Yeah, I'll drop my email. It's just the first letter of my first name, A, and then hair, like hair on your head, HAIR. So ahair@leadersre.com. I'm sure one of your staff can drop it in the show notes too.
Yep.
But leaders, RE is like the RE is in realestate.com. Shoot, hit me up. And happy to have a phone call and see if I can help anybody by any means.
Awesome, man. Well, great job on the show today. And thank you so much for all the information. It was very, very helpful. I hope you have a good one, my friend. Good seeing you.
Yeah, thank you.